Synthesis of Yoga, Sri Aurobindo. The Yoga of Self-Perfection, Part 4. Continuing with Chapter 7, Purification, Intelligence, and Will. Mid-page 668. But this is still a very incomplete movement. We find that it progresses towards a greater completeness in proportion as we arrive at two kinds of perfection. First, a greater and greater detachment from the control of the lower suggestions. Secondly, an increasing discovery of a self-existent being, light, power, and ananda, which surpasses and transforms the normal humanity. The ethical mind becomes perfect in proportion as it detaches itself from desire, sense suggestion, impulse, customary dictated action, and discovers a self of right, love, strength, and purity, in which it can live accomplished and make it the foundation of all its actions. The aesthetic mind is perfected in proportion as it detaches itself from all its cruder pleasures and from outward conventional canons of the aesthetic reason and discovers a self-existent self and spirit of pure and infinite beauty and delight, which gives its own light and joy to the material of the aesthesis. The mind of knowledge is perfected even when it gets away from impression and dogma and opinion and discovers a light of self-knowledge and intuition, which illumines all the workings of the sense and reason, all self-experience and world experience. The will is perfected when it gets away from and behind its impulses and its customary ruts of effectuation and discovers an inner power of the spirit, which is the source of an intuitive and luminous action and an original harmonious creation. The movement of perfection is away from all domination by the lower nature and towards a pure and powerful reflection of the being, power, knowledge, and delight of the spirit and self in the Buddhi. The yoga of self-perfection is to make this double movement as absolute as possible. All emissions of desire in the Buddhi is an impurity. The intelligence colored by desire is an impure intelligence, and it distorts truth. The will, colored by desire, is an impure will, and it puts a stamp of distortion, pain, and imperfection upon the soul's activity. All emissions of the emotions of the soul of desire is an impurity, and similarly distorts both the knowledge and the action. All subjection of the Buddhi to the sensations and impulses is an impurity. The thought and will have to stand back, detached from desire. Troubling emotion, distracting or mastering impulse, and to act in their own light until they can discover a greater guide, a will, tapas, or divine shakti, which will take the place of desire and mental will and impulse. An ananda, or pure delight of the spirit, and an illumined spiritual knowledge which will express themselves in the action of that shakti. This complete detachment, impossible without an entire self-government, equality, calm, sama, samatha, shanti, is the surest step towards the purification of the Buddhi. A calm, equal, and detached mind can alone reflect the peace or base the action of the liberated spirit. The buddhi itself is burdened with a mixed and impure action. When we reduce it to its own proper forms, we find that it has three stages or elevations of its functioning. First, its lowest basis is a habitual, customary action, which is a link between the higher reason and the sense mind, a kind of current understanding. This understanding is, in itself, dependent on the witness of the senses and the rule of action which the reason deduces from the sense mind's perception of and attitude to life. It is not capable of itself forming pure thought and will, but it takes the workings of the higher reason and turns them into coin of opinion and customary standard of thought or canon of action. When we perform a sort of practical analysis of the thinking mind, cut away this element and hold back the higher reason free, observing and silent, we find that this current understanding begins to run about in a futile circle, repeating all its formed opinions and responses to the impressions of things, but incapable of any strong adaptation and initiation. As it feels more and more the refusal of sanction from the higher reason, it begins to fail, to lose confidence in itself and its forms and habits, to distrust the intellectual action, and to fall into weakness and silence. The stilling of this current, running, circling, repeating thought mind, is the principal part of that silencing of the thought, which is one of the most effective disciplines of yoga. But the higher reason itself has a first stage of dynamic, pragmatic intellectuality in which creation, action, and will are the real motive, and thought and knowledge are employed to form basic constructions and suggestions, which are used principally for effectuation. To this pragmatic reason, truth is only a formation of the intellect, effective for the action of the inner and the outer life. When we cut it away from the still higher reason, which seeks impersonally to reflect truth rather than to create personally effective truth, we find then that this pragmatic reason can originate, progress, enlarge the experience by dynamic knowledge. But it has to depend on the current understanding as a pedestal and base, and put its whole weight on life and becoming. It is in itself, therefore, a mind of the will to life and action, much more a mind of will than a mind of knowledge. It does not live in any assured and constant and eternal truth, but in progressing and changing aspects of truth which serve the shifting forms of our life and becoming, or, at the highest, help life to grow and progress. By itself, this pragmatic mind can give us no firm foundation and no fixed goal. It lives in the truth of the hour, not in any truth of eternity. But when purified of dependence on the customary understanding, it is a great creator, and in association with the highest mental reason, it becomes a strong channel and bold servant for the effectuation of truth in life. The value of its work will depend on the value and the power of the highest truth-seeking reason. But by itself, it is a sport of time and a bond slave of life. The seeker of the silence has to cast it away from him. The seeker of the integral divinity has to pass beyond it, to replace and transform this thinking mind intent on life by a greater effectuating spiritual will, the truth will of the Spirit. The third and noblest stage of the intellectual will and reason is an intelligence which seeks for some universal reality or for a still higher self-existent truth for its own sake, and tries to live in that truth. This is primarily a mind of knowledge, and only secondarily a mind of will. In its excess of tendency, it often becomes incapable of will except the one will to know. For action, it is dependent on the aid of the pragmatic mind, and therefore man tends in action to fall away from the purity of the truth his highest knowledge holds, into a mixed, inferior, inconstant, and impure effectuation. The disparity, even when it is not an opposition, between knowledge and will is one of the principal defects of the human Buddhi. But there are other inherent limitations of all human thinking. This highest Buddhi does not work in man in its own purity. It is assailed by the defects of the lower mentality, continually clouded by it, distorted, veiled, and prevented or lamed in its own proper action. Purified as much as may be from that habit of mental degradation, the human Buddhi is still a power that searches for the truth, but is never in full or direct possession of it. It can only reflect truth of the Spirit and try to make it its own by giving it a limited mental value and a distinct mental body. Nor does it reflect integrally, but seizes either an uncertain totality or else a sum of limited particulars. First, it seizes on this or that partial reflection and by subjection to the habit of customary mind turns it into a fixed, imprisoning opinion. All new truth, it judges from the standpoint it has thus formed, and therefore puts on it the color of a limiting prejudgment. Release it as much as possible from this habit of limiting opinion, still, it is subject to another affliction, the demand of the pragmatic mind for immediate effectuation, which gives it no time to proceed to larger truth, but fixes it by the power of effective realization in whatever it has already judged, known, and lived. Freed from all these chains, the Buddhi can become a pure and flexible reflector of truth, adding light to light, proceeding from realization to realization. It is then limited only by its own inherent limitations. These limitations are mainly of two kinds. First, its realizations are only mental realizations. To get to the truth itself, we have to go beyond the mental Buddhi. Again, the nature of the mind prevents it from making an effective unification of the truths it seizes. It can only put them side by side and see oppositions or effect some kind of partial, executive, and practical combination. But it finds finally that the aspects of the truth are infinite, and that none of its intellectual forms are quite valid, because the Spirit is infinite. And in the Spirit, all is true. But nothing in the mind can give the whole truth of the spirit. Either then the Buddhi becomes a pure mirror of many reflections, reflecting all truth that falls on it, but ineffective, and when turned to action, either incapable of decision or chaotic, or it has to make a selection and act as if that partiality were the whole truth, though it knows otherwise. It acts in a helpless limitation of ignorance, though it may hold a truth far greater than its action. On the other hand, it may turn away from life and thought and seek to exceed itself and pass into the truth beyond it. This it may do by seizing on some aspect, some principle, some symbol or suggestion of reality, and pushing that to its absolute, all-absorbing, all-excluding term of realization, or by seizing on and realizing some idea of indeterminate being or non-being, from which all thought and life fall away into cessation. The Buddhi casts itself into a luminous sleep, and the soul passes away into some ineffable height of spiritual being. Therefore, in dealing with the Buddhi, we must either take one of these choices, or else try the rarer adventure of lifting the soul from the mental being into a spiritual gnosis, to see what we can find in the very core of that supernal light and power. This gnosis contains the sun of the divine knowledge will, burning in the heavens of the supreme conscious being, to which the mental intelligence and will are only a focus of diffused and deflected rays and reflections. That possesses the divine unity, and yet, or rather, therefore, can govern the multiplicity and diversity. Whatever selection, self-limitation, combination it makes is not imposed on it by ignorance, but is self-developed by a power of self-possessing divine knowledge. When the gnosis is gained, it can then be turned on the whole nature to divinize the human being. It is impossible to rise into it at once. If that could be done, it would mean a sudden and violent overshooting, a breaking or slipping through the gates of the sun. Suryasya Devara, without near possibility of return. We have to form as a link or bridge an intuitive or illuminated mind, which is not the direct gnosis, but in which a first derivative body of the gnosis can form. This illumined mind will first be a mixed power, which we shall have to purify of all its mental dependence and mental forms, so as to convert all willing and thinking into thought sight and truth-seeing will by an illumined discrimination, intuition, inspiration, revelation. That will be the final purification of the intelligence and the preparation for the siddhi of the gnosis. End of chapter 7, Purification, Intelligence, and Will.